You're listening to Type Radio. My name is Ratna Ramanathan. Now we're talking.
Type Radio.
You're listening to Type Radio. My name is Donald.
I'm Lisa.
We're at the Imagine It conference in Bologna. It's March. With us is Ratna Ramanathan. Welcome.
Thank you.
The first question is, how much hours do you work a week?
Right now, it's pretty high because I have what I call two jobs. I have my graphic design job, and I have my design student job, and I have my design teacher job. So I sleep about 6 hours, and most of the rest of the time is spent on design in different aspects. I've just submitted my PhD, so I'm hoping that would come down a little bit. But if I was estimating, I'd say at least 18 hours a day would be spent on it. It's pretty high right now. It drops to about 12, I'd say.
And how do you relax?
I like sleeping a lot because I miss that quite a bit. But I live in Reading, which is quite close to London. So we have the best of both worlds in the sense that Reading is quite, it's lots of nature. It's like going for walks, cycling by the river in good weather, which in Britain you don't take for granted. And of course London, because everything there is just, you know, so there's music and just seeing the sights, lots of good exhibitions. And I read a lot, I think, just to keep in touch with what's going on. And my reading now has changed. It's also books, but also online to kind of keep in touch with what's going on everywhere else, not just around me, I think.
What is one of the books that you read lately that made a big impression?
Oh, you put me on the spot now. I think the one that comes to mind is The Time Traveler's Wife. Great. It's just for me, I think, it's just about how, you know, passing people by and, you know, meeting people at different times. And I think that's a lot of how human experience is. So it was just one of those books. I mean, for me, I have a really high test, is that if I start it and then it takes over, so I don't want to do anything else but be in that world. And that was one of the books, I think, Time Traveler's Wife, yeah.
You studied both design and you design yourself. Do you consider yourself like a scientist or a researcher more than a designer, or both?
That's an interesting question. I think it's where I'm doing my PhD, there's no space for practice. They expect you to be quite theoretical in your approach, and I can understand that. But I think that I would say I'm a designer because I'm thinking of something from a maker's point of view always. I don't see myself as a scientist because I think design is full of mistakes, and that's what makes it human. It has to have those mistakes. And I come from India where, you know, you don't really have control over the process. So you can see this up to a point, it looks beautiful on your computer, but as she goes out into the world and is made by somebody else. And the process of that making has to absorb their view on how they see things as well. So I'm quite used to that, a very maker's point of view. Mm. And I see science, which is possibly wrong, but I see science as much more, you know, within, you can put it in a box and you can actually call it something. I think, yeah, that's it. So, but research is an important part. And I think that when I came to this, I thought of research as very academic. It's something that other people do. As a maker, I don't need to. But I think we're researching all the time. When I came to Bologna, I was always, you know, from the airport, I was researching the city already and forming my impressions of it by the typefaces, the architecture, you know, the college, all of that. And I think that as an educator, I'd like people to have that kind of point of view, as in that we are, that researching is not really academic, but it's something that everybody has.
Would you find it a bit strange, for example, if you say there are sign painters in India and then having a theoretic approach over design? I mean, it's a contrast. I mean, do you think of that all the time in your research?
I think research is very specific. I think you have to be really careful about, and that's something I talk about later as well, is you have to be really careful about generalizing. And we're in a culture, as in a global culture right now, where we feel like, we know everything very easily because we have easy access to information, like on the internet or even visiting. Most of us can, you know, you save up money and from Europe you could go to India and you could get a piece of India. I think we tend to do that surface thing and assume that we know a lot about something, rather than actually very few of us spend time actually getting to know the insides of it. So I would say that it's the context and actually describing the context that's important. So while I might have a so-called quote-unquote theory about something that's very specific to only where I come from, so I can only say I know about that. And if you say that you know sign painters in Greece, for example, I would compare my experience with yours, but I wouldn't go so far as to say that my experience is yours.
Okay.
For example. So I think theories work up to a point, but you have to very clearly set the boundaries of that theory. And not forget that theories are actually about human beings. So you can theorize only up to a certain point. There's always going to be somebody who will shoot down your theory.
You're like constantly moving around between India and in the UK, I suppose. Do you consider yourself more Indian or more English in your work?
You're asking all, like, it's this, these questions are really scary because it feels like you've gone into my past and found out something.
Well, we have.
I think I did my master's in Britain. I did it at Central St. Martin's. And for me, it's sort of like I found myself there as a designer, because their design was introduced more as a concept rather than as a style, and I quite like that.
Is it the other way around in India?
It is, and it's kind of, I think it's changing now, but we've always kind of looked westwards for you know, how to make design, especially from, I mean, most design is advertising, so we've always looked kind of westwards, and you know, I come from an advertising background, so we always had these black books and that kind of stuff in the 80s that we would leaf through, and that was our example. And I know that's changing now. I think my design is a bit of both. I left India because I felt my design didn't fit in India. So I worked for very few people because it was a bit too much in their face, the kind of stuff that I was doing. And they wanted it toned down a bit because it was too, I don't know, demanding and not so simple. So I didn't really agree with the way that design was done.
So which designers were you looking at when you were living in India? Like which Western, say, design?
It's funny because we weren't, I think it was such a, like advertising is such a world within itself.
Yeah.
So, and I worked for Gilby and Mehta in India. So we would look at just, I mean, I don't think there were really names. It was more campaigns that you'd be looking at. So it was very, very superficial. You weren't really looking at a designer and saying, I actually like that guy's work. So I was only educated about that, I think, after I stepped out and did a degree over here, that you kind of become acquainted with individuals rather than campaigns or brands. So we were looking, and we want brand hunting rather than designer hunting at that time. And now India's starting to slowly develop its own visual language, I think. Because design is a very new thing in India. It's much more art and craft. It's those are its strengths. So design is a very Western concept, definitely.
Well, India has sort of been bombarded into the modern era, you could say, due to globalization and whatnot. What is the major change because of that? And you think that's too bad? That's all these things are like disappearing and changing because of globalization and modernization?
I like change, and I think India embraces change quite well without losing kind of intrinsic qualities about it. I'm sure you would have heard of, you know, how class-based India is. It's quite divided and, you know, judged by class in the sense that, for example, if I tell you my name and you're Indian, you know exactly where to place me and where I'm from by my surname immediately, which works up to a point, but, you know, it's quite judgmental.
But it's also quite British, too.
Exactly. I think what I like is for me, I go back every 3 or 4 months, and every 3 or 4 months, there is a change there's a big change, because so much more people are, you know, are empowered. So I'll give you an example of me sitting in a coffee shop waiting for a friend. It was a 5-star hotel, which is where most coffee shops still are. And this group of people walked in traditional Indian clothes, clearly not what you'd call upper class or upper middle class even, so quite poor, and dressed very simply, just a group of men. And they were with two Chinese men, so it was clearly some sort of a business thing. And they walked in there, and I would never, if I'd seen them on the street or seen them somewhere else, I would have never ever said that they would be able to afford a cup of coffee in there. And they came in, they ordered a cup of coffee, they ordered whatever they wanted, and they ate. And they spoke in Tamil, which was the state language. And I was just thrilled, because 5 years ago, you would never have seen them. Those same people would never have been able to afford a cup of coffee in there. And they were taking pride in taking the international visitors, you know, to a posh place. So that for me is really positive, that people who haven't been able to afford something are not thinking twice about that. I think we need to be really careful though, because I'm so afraid in some sense that might boom. So I think we need to kind of take small steps towards that change. But I would say for the most part it is positive, only because India is holding her own. We're not willing to give up the identity. So while all the stuff is coming in, because it's taking place in India, I think it still has its, you know, idiosyncrasies and all of that. So I would say it's positive. I would say it's hugely positive.
And you teach in both countries. What is the difference in do you change your teaching methods depending where you are, or?
No, not at all. Actually, yeah. I think that it's quite the same. I think that students in England are much more out there, in the sense that they're quite unafraid to ask you of something, or quite unafraid to oppose you if they disagree with you. So it's a very liberating environment, because you can actually be. I can come out full force and feel like I'm not going to, you know, scare anybody.
Yeah.
In India, I think I have to be a little bit more careful, because it's just culturally different, and I'm the teacher, so I have a certain stature. So even if they disagree with me, they won't say it out, because it would be impolite. So I have to kind of work around that a little bit by pushing them, by actually saying something that is openly disagreeable, in the hope that it would kind of, you know, start an atmosphere of...
And does it happen?
It does. It takes them a while to kind of see that I'm, you know, I'm not a teacher in that sense. And it normally breaks through when we go out for lunch together, so it's out of the class environment. So after about 2 days or something, then they start getting a little bit...
And are the groups fairly mixed? I mean, are there both men and is there equal amount?
Yeah, I think in design, because it's a design school, It's quite equal. Yeah, it's quite equal. In fact, I think in England I actually teach more women than men. But in India it's quite equal, I'd say.
Yeah, we were reading about an article about the sign painters, and they're all, it seems that most of them are men.
Mm. Well, I think it's basically, again, going back to the whole art craft thing, it was very much a craftsman's kind of, so you have that whole, you know, teacher and someone, an apprentice, kind of that whole guru system, really. So I think it would have been, I think traditionally it's a very man-led thing. Also, I think physically it's quite, they have to climb up, you know, 50 feet from the ground.
Yeah.
So a traditional woman wearing a sari, standing up there would be quite, she would have to change into, you know, more masculine attire for her to do something like that. But you're right, I have gone through this whole thing and met people, but there are no women out there.
Do you think they're deliberately kept out, women, from the profession, historically?
Yeah, I think historically they just, I mean, that's very, it's very Indian in those ways. So, I would say that. I would go so far as to say that. Because there's no, you'd have to actually have someone who is willing to teach you first, how to do that, and then you'd have to be, they'd have to be willing to take you in their school, so that would be, and they're all men, so for them to actually accept a woman into that.
And what is it considered as a profession?
It is an honourable profession. I think it's seen very much in an artistic, but it is changed. I mean, like I said, I started researching this visually about 5 to 6 years ago, and now if I want to actually find these people, they don't exist anymore, because India has so embraced this, and that's one negative aspect, is they've embraced technology so well that all our, you know, billboards and everything are now mainly photographic. So the sign painters are slowly being rooted out. So while they are seen as artists, they're kind of in between. You know, they're not fine artists, so they will be actually protected in some way.
Yeah.
So they're commercial artists, so they, you know, you can kind of do away with them. Because then, you know, the need for them kind of slowly starts disappearing. Because it's so much easier to do it on, you know, by yourself.
And probably cheaper too, like
Absolutely.
These days. So
yeah.
That's like
the
economic
yeah.
reasons will be like prevail probably.
Actually, no, I think it's quite equitable in India still. Mm. I mean, if I wanted to do a hand-painted banner and I wanted to do a photographic banner, I still might find the hand-painted banner a little bit more inexpensive.
But that is changing. I mean, there's like...
That is changing.
The balancing
yeah.
is
yeah.
like going the other way.
Yeah, yeah. it is. But it's also this whole sense of... I mean, it's completely advertising-led, because they want to see their products up there, but they don't want to see them so-called interpreted by a human hand. So they want that sense of perfectionism, and they're willing to kind of, pay for it. So it's slowly pushing, and it's setting this setting a standard. So it's pushing these guys away. So they're becoming, I don't know, like trishaw.
Technology, has that influenced the style of sign painting throughout the years? Like, do you see like a difference?
No, it hasn't. It's kind of weird. They just absorb this technology, because India has always been kind of about cut and paste. You're always borrowing from something and putting it. So it only makes it more flashy. So the stuff that's coming out is still more flat, but it's still, there's no, I'd say not. They're just kind of encouraged a bit more by the ease of operation, I think, rather than changing them. So there's no finesse or style to that. It's still quite rough and ready, but and the colours and the palette and everything is quite the same.
So you couldn't tell, well, apart from the content stylistically, you couldn't tell the difference between now and, say, 10 years ago?
Yeah.
You could?
Yeah, I'd say you can't. No,
you can't?
You can't. I would say that there's no... I mean, there are little things like this, you know, for example, you get a little shadow with the lettering, for example. So you see little bits of technology creeping in, but it's rendered in such a strong Indian hand that, you know, it is. So unless you're looking really, really closely, you wouldn't be able to tell. I mean, if I picked a random picture from 10 years ago that I've taken now, no. I wouldn't see, if it was hand-painted, no difference. No difference, really.
Obviously, it's like... the autograph, like the personality that's in the sign painter's work, that's disappearing because of the technology. Do you think that it should be preserved in some way, like the knowledge? And you think how do you think that's possible?
I completely agree with that. I mean, I was just looking at Jan Middletop's, you know, where he went down and all these guys had signed their signs.
Yeah.
And that very much exists in India as well. So that's exactly how I found those people, by their signatures and kind of hunting them down. I think we're going to regret it. I think that India, I mean, I'm living in Britain, and I see how the British preserve their history and what they have. And they have quite little. We're a very small island. They have very little, actually. And then you look at India, and we have... so much, there's like so much of historic stuff that's going on. And in some ways we take that for granted. I don't think that we really actually see the value of that. I think that it's going to, I mean, we're starting to do that a little bit, because the publisher that I work for in India is, you know, getting these guys to actually contribute to books. So they actually have to create artwork that's kept in books. But I think if we see that on a government level, I can't see them actually... you know, unless it's seen as a endanger. It's kind of like the commercial artists are somewhere in between, because the folk artists are very recognized as, you know, it's a traditional old art medium. Then you have the other artists that are kind of okay. But these guys fall into kind of a middle ground where their purpose has been completely commercial, but at the same time, it's an art form. And I think in India we haven't gotten to kind of completely giving that its due yet. Mm-hmm. So its commercial art is still as worth preserving as the fine art stuff. And I think that's going to take some changing, really.
Suppose like a government would not see how a Coca-Cola sign could be like one of their cultural heritage.
Exactly.
In a way.
Exactly.
But in art school, for example, are there courses you can take on lettering or
no? I mean, I did no. I mean, it's still a kind of in a very Western way, I think. Not that I know of. I mean, not really.
You can introduce it. No? Yeah.
Die. Radio.